Josh, you don't just walk into a store and buy cyber hearts. Did you pilfer that?
Of course, from a group of Omega Force soldiers. They wanted me to kill Ike Sloan, but instead I threw their hearts back at them and let the dragons kill them all.
Josh, did I tell you I started lifting?
No.
I decided to finally be a gym bro.
Oh.
Yeah.
Watch out, everybody. Tom's coming in with his pre-workout.
Oh, getting them gains. No, I had this random thing happen to me one day where I woke up and I was like, you know, I think I'd like to live for a while. So I decided I can't be a lazy bum anymore. And I've lifted a couple times so far this year. The major problem is that I got motivated to do it through a group of friends from work, but they lift at 5:30 in the morning. So now I lift at 5:30 in the morning and it's taking a while for my body to adjust to that.
Yeah. When we were getting ready and like working out and getting healthy and stuff like that for the wedding, I spent several months of waking up at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning doing like 3-hour workouts every day too.
Yeah.
With like one break day in the middle of the week. Yeah, it was it did a number on me, but like I felt great.
Oh, yeah. Like I do feel great after I do it. It's just you know, I'm sure I'll adapt at some point to the sleep schedule. But
Yeah.
Overall it's good for you. It just sucks to start.
Yes. Have you been doing meal prepping and stuff?
Yeah. Mary's the master chef around here, so she handles meal preps. And trying to just, you know, eat cleaner, kill some bad habits. And
she's playing cooking mama.
Yes, she is my cooking mama. What about you guys? You obviously have to be. Are you the cooking mama?
No, we're.
Have you been superseded by Becca?
Depends on what the food is. Uh-huh. Like if it's a longer, like more in-depth meal, she'll probably be cooking it. But if it's like steaks or burgers or that kind of stuff, I'll take care of the meat side of things.
Yeah, you're the meat master.
She usually does like all of like the healthy meals, and I usually do the very unhealthy meals.
I think you mean to say the fun meals.
Yes, the meals that make you feel good about yourself.
Well, I'm glad to know that your bonanza kitchen skills are still helping you out in your adult life.
Every now and then you gotta go for some chicken Monterey.
Oh yeah, baby.
And with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. As always, I'm Josh.
And I'm Sergeant Tom Shotgun Peeler.
And today, we are talking about Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon.
So Josh, I think this is pretty significant. This is the first piece of DLC that we've ever kind of discussed on the show, right?
Yeah. Is it considered DLC?
Yeah, like, it is. In the same way that Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare is DLC, you know, like, I would call this DLC, personally.
Okay, because it's a standalone game. That's the only reason I'm kind of weary on it.
I mean, the GTA 4 DLCs are standalone titles, too, you know, like, still DLC.
Very rarely do I actually play DLC for games, which I feel like I should play more of it, but like usually by the time DLC comes out, I never want to jump back into that world because it's usually like a really long gap between when the game comes out and then when the DLC releases. Like, there's usually a big gap between the two of them.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, Far Cry 3 came out in 2012, and then this came out at the beginning of 2013. So like there was a little bit of a gap. Like, do you want to jump back into that world again after you've already left it for other newer games?
I get what you're saying. Like when you're on a game, you're on the high of that game. And when you walk away from it, you know, if the DLC isn't timed well enough, it's like, is it going to relight that fire for you, or you're just not going to care?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I really liked recently with the Spider-Man game that came out. It came out in September, October, November, and December. There was a DLC stories that came out. So it was like, okay, by the time you're done playing the game, the next thing a DLC is good. By the time you're done playing that DLC, the next one's out. Like, it was a continuation for you.
Were those free?
No. No, you had to pay for those.
See, I will say this. When DLC does come out very quickly, I get all like, you had this ready. You were just purposely withholding it so that we could pay you more money from it. Like, I get what you're saying about if DLC takes too long, it's bad. But if DLC is too quick, I think it's also like, why wasn't this just in the final game? Like,
right.
You know, a month later, what were you doing?
Right. So, Tom, do you want to jump right in and hit us with some of that nitty gritty?
Hell yeah. So, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon was published by Ubisoft and released in North America on April 30th, 2013 on the PlayStation and Xbox 360. It is a single-player, first-person shooter action-adventure game. And it features in a nice little bit of, like, homage to the type of 80s movies it's parodying and or ripping off and or paying tribute to. It stars Michael Bane of Terminator and Aliens fame as its main character, Sergeant Rex Power Colt.
Which I absolutely loved because he was in two of the best movies of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And like, perfect choice of casting.
Let's just get first impressions out of the way. What did you think of this game, Josh?
First impressions, I love the game. I love the idea. I love the atmosphere. I love the comedy to it. I'm a huge fan of everything 80s, whether it's the action movies or it's the cartoons or if it's the references to the 80s and stuff like that. And this game was like all of that mixed into one. Like if you could have like, what's the perfect like combination of everything 80s in a video game, this is probably the closest thing that you're really going to get. I mean, it's pretty much a playable 80s action film.
Now, I agree with you completely. This is a game that's very aware of the mood and the era it's trying to emulate. You know, back when the early 2000s seemed so far off that any kind of horrible future could be possible. So the 80s always made sure it was brightly neon lit and filled with the most ridiculous action possible.
Lots and lots of purple.
Yes. Bisexual purple lighting everywhere. But it is a lot of fun in its spirit, but I got some really big gameplay gripes that kind of it hurt the experience a little bit for me.
So I think I know where you're going with this, because I think we've talked about this previously. Mm-hmm. Before we actually started recording.
Yeah.
When I played this on the Xbox 360, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought it handled perfectly well. Like I thought like everything about this was just, it felt good. When I recently just booted it up on the Xbox One because of the backwards capability to it, It just didn't feel right.
Yeah. I think it says a lot about how far first-person shooter mechanics and even just general, I don't know how to even put it. It's amazing how quickly some of the mechanics in this game have aged very poorly.
Mm-hmm. So. It's weird because, like, I remember Far Cry 3 being fun and enjoyable, and the gameplay and the shooting mechanics to it were enjoyable and like they're user friendly. But this, it just felt very clunky and very stiff. It almost felt like I was playing a Fallout game.
Yeah. Well, I also have some opinions on those very same mechanic issues that you just brought up, but you want to just kind of summarize the story? Because this one's got a pretty fun story. I don't want to lead with all of the salt. Do you want to get into the fun part first?
Yeah, so let me just say, this game has probably my favorite opening to any video game that I can think of.
Oh,
like wow. Playable opening.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about the actual cutscenes at the beginning and stuff. I'm actually talking about the playable opening when you're on the helicopter, you're shooting, and Little Richard's Long Tall Sally is playing, just like the opening to Predator from the 80s. Like, it's so good, and it's just like, you know, like when this comes in, like this is gonna be fun.
Yeah,
like you're gonna have fun with a lot of the references and stuff like that.
It's a game. It's one of those games that just proudly up front says, "This is what I'm all about." And if you're not into this, you should probably just turn it off, you know?
But Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon is set in the dystopian year of 2007.
Ooh. Little do they know how much more dystopian it would get after 2007.
So it's the aftermath of nuclear war.
Uh-huh.
And you are Sergeant Rex Power Colt.
the most masculine name in the history of the
American
planet.
Cybernetic super soldier. Like, that's just like, how much more 80s can you get?
I mean, he could have a Flock of Seagulls haircut and be drinking a can of Crystal Pepsi.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
What I love is, and this is something that, just doing some research on it, Ubisoft describes the game as where the player must get the girl, kill the bad guys, and save the world.
It's pretty direct. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much as cut and dry as this game can ever be.
Yeah. Yeah. This doesn't have all the layered nuance in terms of its morality that Far Cry 3 itself did. This is just, you know what you're doing and how you're doing it. It's just how stylish are you going to look doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Rex is this super soldier who was enhanced after, was it a near-death experience?
I believe so. Yeah. I think they explained it during one of the cutscenes.
The cutscenes, which are done in a very kind of like Zero Wing style, you know.
Yeah, it's very Ninja Gaiden.
Okay, that's a far better description, yeah. At first I was like, oh, you're doing it like this because you didn't have the budget for it. But then I was like, you know, it also just works for the era that they're paying tribute to and everything. Everything's just done in these 2D images where character models will like slide or like they're barely animated in a way that like kind of classic games use to convey story points. Mm-hmm. But full voice acting from its cast, which not only features Michael Bain, but also features the great Phil Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Cybernetic Super Soldier dropped into this base with your partner Spider. And Josh, what are they there for?
They are there to investigate Colonel Sloan and his elite agents who have maybe gone rogue.
Mm.
So you're out to kind of infiltrate the base and see, you know, what's going on? You know, what's happening here? We get a really fun tutorial at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very tongue-in-cheek tutorial where the little robot kind of Alexa Cortana assistant is like giving you all these instructions and Rex just really doesn't want to hear any of it. He wants to get right into the action. And the game just kind of coddles you more and more as Rex protests. It's funny.
So you find out that Sloan is actually out there doing some evil stuff.
Mm-hmm. He's a bad boy.
Yeah. And yeah, you confront him about it and he actually kills your partner like right at the beginning of the game.
Yep. Boom. Something I want to just get off my chest about that. So something I did not like is there is an entire mission dedicated to keeping Spider alive, right? It's like Spider's at a computer and he's like, I'm going to hack it. You have to keep me alive. So I had to do the mission like over at least once because Spider died and I was like, ugh. So that segment ends and Spider's like, oh, I couldn't hack the computer. And I was like, oh, that's annoying. And then 5 minutes later, Sloan shows up and kills Spider. So it's like, I hate when games do that, like, you know, when it's like protect this character even though the character is gonna die anyway, you know, like it's one of my pet peeves. I don't know how you felt about it, but I like Spider the character. Phil Lamar has a lot of fun with it.
Oh my god, yeah, he's so over the top.
Uh-huh.
Just the way he talks, and it's not very PG at all.
no yeah, he leans right into just this comical stereotype of like the sassy best friend soldier in one of these 80s movies. Very good stuff.
Yeah. You get knocked out and then you get awoken by Sloan's like scientist, doctor lady, Dr. Darling.
Yeah, she's like the mastermind behind Sloan's little scheme to take the radiated blood from these animals on the island known as blood dragons and inject them into his soldiers to make them stronger. So that was what her job initially entailed, but she's tired of Sloan's crap and she's like, oh, Rex, you're this awesome hunk of 80s masculinity. I want to be on your side now. And
yeah,
Rex just like,
so she's out to betray. She betray him, Tom.
Sloan's fed up with this world. And that kind of just kicks off the rest of the game. It's a lot of wandering around the island doing missions that, you know, push you and Darling towards stopping Sloan. You're liberating bases, just like you did in Far Cry 3. You're saving...
killing animals.
Yep, hunting, saving scientists, which replaces saving, like, the tourists and everything in Far Cry 3. So mm-hmm. It's just a lot of, like, take Far Cry 3's mechanics, paint it purple, and then just call it something futuristic, and boom, you have a mission in Blood Dragon.
Yeah, absolutely. And add a lot of synthesizer to the background.
Yeah, but I'm never going to complain about that.
No, I won't.
So I wanted to talk real quick, since we're like in this, and we're bringing up comparisons to Far Cry 3. So the controls of this game, as you mentioned at the start of the show, I don't think that this game controls very well. You use the word clunky. I think that's an excellent word to describe it.
Like I said, I remember when I played on the 360, it played perfectly fine, but I don't know if we've just been spoiled over the past 6 years or whatnot.
Possibly. But I just want to say, I just wanted to bring this up while we're talking about the original Far Cry 3, the game that this is spun off from. So this has all of the mechanics of Far Cry 3 naturally. It's built from the same engine, but I think the problem is in the fact that Rex is presented, you know, as unstoppable super soldier, but he still controls like the main character of Far Cry 3, who was just like, you know, this inexperienced college tourist who had to like learn to become a killing machine. But like in Far Cry 3, you don't have like perfect movement and perfect controls because you're just this average person doing all these incredible action things. But like with Rex, when Rex controls the same way and he's so clunky, it's like I get a little frustrated because I'm like, I'm supposed to be this cybernetic super soldier. Why can I only grab onto ledges that have blue vines on them? You know, like, why can't I just jump wherever I want? Why can't I do anything I want if I'm supposed to be so, you know, superior?
I mean, that might just deal with limitations because, I mean, you can't really just Breath of the Wild it.
No, well, I mean, I get it. It's just like, it's where I feel like it's a point where like story and mechanics didn't line up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've said like it was a little bit of a bummer, you know?
Well, I mean, he is part man too, Tom. So he can't just be all machine.
Yeah, but he's also the greatest soldier of all time, you know? Like, you think he'd be able to climb a ridge without blue vines on it?
It's really hard for me to look at this game in a negative light, okay? I'm not a huge Far Cry fan. I'm not a huge open world fan.
Okay.
I think the reason I like this game is because of the 80s nostalgia inside of it.
Uh-huh.
This is a game that I pretty much prefer to watch somebody play and not actually participate in.
Okay.
It's really hard because like this is one of those games like you see it, you're like, oh man, I would really like to play this game.
Yeah.
And you get it and you're just like, I'm not having fun at all with this. It's like when, you know, we originally saw like the Old Republic on PC and it's like, oh man, this Star Wars game looks so amazing. And then it's just like, click, 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 click. Oh man, look at how immersive this world is. Click, 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 click.
Yeah.
It's like when you watch a trailer to any Blizzard game and you realize that World of Warcraft does not look like that.
The cinematics. Well, I know exactly what you're getting at. My spin on it, it's a little bit different. I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but like, I wish this hadn't been so explicitly tied into Far Cry. Like, I wish that this had gotten its own kind of like engine and its own, I don't even know how to really say it without getting...
This shouldn't have been a Far Cry spinoff. It should have been its own game.
Yeah, it should have been its own game, and it should have had its own like unique mechanics developed for it. It's just like, you know, games like Infamous, where the whole point is that you're playing as an enhanced being and the gameplay ties into that. I think if Blood Dragon was just its own unique thing and the gameplay was built around Rex being an enhanced soldier, it would have been a little bit more fun to play. But I agree with you, like, the thing that kept me going was I wanted to see where this goofy story was going, you know?
Oh my god, yeah. And I know exactly what you're talking about with the Infamous thing. Like, even, for instance, The Force Unleashed. Like, you are a Jedi in that game. Uh-huh. Like, you actually feel as powerful as Starkiller is in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why couldn't, if you are this cybernetic killing machine super soldier thing, like, why don't you feel like it rather than like, yeah, you take a little bit more damage than everybody else, but that's really it.
It's easy to make these criticisms in hindsight. I know they were just working off of the engine they had in front of them, but let's focus on the good things we got.
Yeah, let's just talk about like using Far Cry 3's mechanic of like picking up rocks and distracting enemies and stuff like that. You actually use D20 dice, and I thought that was pretty funny.
I got a kick out of that. Like the first time I threw that, I was like, oh, just because I've started playing D&D recently. So D20 dice have had like this new level of fondness in my life.
And it's just little subtle things that they do in the game, too. Like the way he twirls like his clips before he puts them in his gun and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is like an exaggeration on like an 80s action hero. Like he's too cool for everything, but mm-hmm. he does it in a cool way and he thinks he's cool, and it's just,
he's got a dry witty comeback for every single thing delivered yeah. in the most like gravelly way possible,
you know. And like, I no, like, if he's
like, no, your mom, you know, just yeah. like anything like that.
And if he says a joke already, like people call him out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, whatever,
leave me alone.
I love just like there's so many little things, like I was saying though, like the loading screens are like the VHS like tracking.
Yeah, I even love the loading screens. They go from a 16:9 game presentation to the 4:3 aspect ratio that a VHS player would have to like show you on one of those old CRTVs. So yeah. attention to detail in the tone and everything is, it's superb. It's very superb.
Like, but going back, like you were saying, to the way that he has to like make a joke about everything, kind of like have the last word, like there's a mission in the game where you have to go around and you have to destroy eggs, mm-hmm. like alien eggs and stuff, or I think it's blood dragon eggs.
Yeah,
and he's making like cheesy jokes every time he's doing it. He's like, this is extra crispy or extra terrestrial. Like it's just like that weird like 80s dad jokes almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like some of my favorite jokes in the thing that he was saying is, there's a cut scene where Dr. Darling's going to inject you with some drug. And he's like, I don't do drugs, because he's sworn a oath to a lucky lady. And she's like, who's that? Your wife? And he's like, no, Lady Liberty. And it's like the Statue of Liberty, but it has like graffiti and stuff all over it.
Well, honestly, he's like, with that,
winners don't do drugs.
Yeah, yeah. What that brought to mind was exactly that. The old screens on arcade cabinets, like, you know, like from games. Basically, whenever I would go to a bowling alley and I would see an 80s arcade cabinet like that was still there, they would have those things with the New York City skyline. It was like, winners don't do drugs. From then, they were trying to use arcades to promote that to kids. Mm-hmm. As soon as he did that, I was like, ah, that's so good.
Yeah. I've talked about the opening, but let's not forget, during the opening cinematic, they do the Predator handshake where they both slap their arms together and yeah. they flex.
Manliest, oh, so good. Manliest handshake in history.
So good.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of other little cool things I liked. Even just outside of the 80s reference, I do love the kind of cheeky humor that they have throughout the game. You know, when you're starting the tutorial section at the beginning, and the first thing you have to confirm in the tutorial, a little box comes up and it says, press A to demonstrate your ability to read. And I'm like, all right, we're good. You know,
yeah.
I got a good laugh.
Everything is very tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm. Oh, tongue, like, almost through the cheek. and then, oh... I got a chuckle out of this at the end when you're assaulting Sloane's base, the big mech suit thing that you're piloting to fight Sloane is called the Battle Armored Dragon Assault Strike System, also known as Badass. Mm-hmm. So,
and when you're riding it, the first thing that comes out of its mouth is, I must break you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's like the 80s rolled up into one video game.
It's like an 80s burrito, you know, like mm-hmm. it's all mixed together really nice, and it's just really good.
Oh my god, there's so many little references too in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that's what, honestly, like you said, like I kind of dealt with the mechanics of the game to push me into getting to that next little reference to be like, oh, that's awesome, like, oh, that's cool, like
I just need one more hit, man.
like all the guns were based off of movies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, his pistol was the AJM-9, which is the Axel J. Murphy, which is RoboCop's gun.
Mm-hmm.
The shotgun is the Galleria 1991, which is Terminator 2's Arnold Schwarzenegger's shotgun.
A little bit of a cheat, because that's technically a 90s movie, but I enjoyed seeing that in there.
Oh, I mean, you think about it. Terminator was also in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. But he had the sawed-off shotgun in the second one.
Right. When he gets, like, a special power towards the end, he's, like, screaming. He's like, I got the touch. I got the power, which is a reference from the Transformers movie. Like, It's so good.
It is great. So let's talk real quick. Just obviously, like the tagline for the game implies, you get the girl and you beat the bad guy and you save the world. And the final cutscene, Dr. Darling and Rex are holding each other as they celebrate having defeated Sloan. But then Darling's eyes open and they're glowing. And it's like, oh no.
She's it's that classic evil. 80s ending to like a horror movie or an action movie where you think you got the bad guy, but you didn't.
Oh no. So here's what I am curious about. I don't think this will probably ever get a sequel. I feel like that ship might have sailed. But what would you like to see in a sequel, Josh? Do you think the sequel has to be like a 90s tribute, or where would you go with a sequel to this?
I think you could still stick with the 80s because, I mean, just take the references and stuff like that that you have now and have a little bit of blending into the 90s, which the crazy thing is, like, we're in 2019. They could start referencing, like, the 2000s and people be like, oh, my God, that's so vintage. That's so retro. Oh, my God. And we're like,
that's so fetch.
And, but we would be like, no, that was like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, not even.
I would honestly like it if the sequel sticks with 80s aesthetics, but instead of 80s action movies, it's 80s comedies. Mm-hmm. So like Dr. Darling is constantly trying to be evil around Rex without Rex noticing. So like it's this, you know, one of those classic 80s situations where it's like, oh, keeping secrets and having wacky slapstick situations, you know, just full on comedy sequel to Blood Dragon.
It's weird because like when I was playing through this again, like I got a lot of Thor Ragnarok vibes from this.
Ooh, yeah, that's a great comparison,
like,
actually.
Like, just the way that the music was, the way that, like, the guns were, like, kind of laser-ish, you know, when you're doing it. It just, I know you're comparing two completely different things here, but, like, it did encapsulate that 80s vibe in the movie, and definitely in this game. But, I don't know, I just...
It uses like a familiar and popular tone from the past to tell a new story, and you know that's how it gets you as engaged as it does. It's like you're flowing in on the warm feelings that the tone gives you, but then when you get to the story, it's also just a lot of goofy fun, and so they go together like, you know, peanut butter and chocolate, and it's great. I know exactly what you're saying with the Thor Ragnarok comparison.
Yeah, it's really hard because I feel like the only reason I'm giving this game so much praise is because of all the 80s stuff that's inside of it.
Okay.
I still can't get over the fact, though, that it controls like crap.
Okay. So let me just ask, maybe try to challenge you really quick. Say one positive thing about it that doesn't have anything to do with 80s anything. Josh, you're okay. Uh-oh.
That's the hard part. Like, the comedy is good, but that's just the writing. Like, the game's written very well.
Okay.
I don't think the mechanics are good. I don't think the gameplay is enjoyable to it, though. And I think that's mainly just my mindset of not really liking like the Far Cry games or the Fallout games or the games that are like open world like this.
Like, okay. All right. So yeah, like you said earlier, it's an experience.
It tries to make you do too much at one time, where I would, if this was like a standalone, like single player game, like a story driven game without all the extra fluff in it, I think they could have tweaked it a little bit more to make it more of like a actual like first person shooter.
Yeah, I don't think you need hunting in this. I'll just say that. They brought that over from Far Cry 3 and I was just like, eh. Like, I mean, I guess like they just figured like, oh, we have to have animals in it because that's what Far Cry 3 had. But
right,
or else the island will feel empty. But I don't know. It just seems weird.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, so like shout out to Lucien Solben. Because, like, the writing is great. Rex is as stupid as he is, as, like, as cliche as he is, he's a fun character to be in control of. You know, when you have a minigun and you're standing there, and as he's firing the minigun, he's screaming the whole time. Like, it's like he's enjoying what he's doing. I don't know. Like, I love that the villains, like the Omega Force in the game, they look like the bad guys from the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Mm-hmm. I got a little bit like of Tron vibes off him too, the way all the baddies are red, you know, neon red.
Yeah. Do you know, I think this is going to be a hot take from me.
Okay. But
do you know how I think I would enjoy this game, Tom?
How?
I think I would enjoy it more playing it on PC.
Oh my gosh. I know one listener who probably will keel over from hearing that from you. why do you think PC would make it better?
Because, like I said, the only thing that I didn't like about this was the gun mechanics.
Okay.
The way that it's too stiff. I feel like if I had a mouse, I would enjoy playing this game more.
Mm. Okay.
But I'm not going to use a mouse and then use a controller for the rest of everything that I need to do. That's just crazy talk.
So would you recommend this as, like, you know, a purchase and a playthrough?
If you got it free on Games of Gold and PlayStation Plus back when they were on there, absolutely. If you see it online for Steam or anything else, $5 or below, pick it up. I think it's worth $5. It's like a 3 to 5 hour long DLC. I don't think it deserves to be the $15 that it's sitting at right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you like the 80s and you like Far Cry, you're going to love this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never dove into it, but I got to try Trials of the Blood Dragon.
Is that like Trials, like that sports bike series and everything?
Yeah, it's Trials, but it's in the Blood Dragon world.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so I got to dive into that. But what's your thoughts on this, Tom?
Similar vein to you, like, you get this on the cheap if you're going to get this at all, because it's very short, and as fun as an experience as you can get out of it, it's a little bit of a trying experience. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I could most recommend it as watching a Let's Play just to get a great story out of it. But yeah, buy this on the cheap if you want to play it. Or just watch it.
Yeah, honestly, if you could find someone streaming this on Twitch, definitely hop on that, because you're going to get a laugh out of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you like I said, if you like anything 80s, you're going to enjoy this. And, I mean, that's really all I can say.
Well, it was acceptable in the 80s. It was acceptable at the time.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with The Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.